What's up, everybody? It's Warriors HQ. I'm Dieter Kurtenbach. That is Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News and the East Bay Times. And happy basketball season, Wes. I know that this is the holiday season, but now it is also basketball season in an official capacity. Usually it's the unofficial start of basketball season. Now it is the official start of the NBA and the preseason Saturday night. At Chase Center, do I have that right? Center against the Denver Nuggets. What are we expecting here out of the first preseason game other than we're not going to see Draymond Green and James Wiseman?
Right, Wiseman and Green won't be playing. You're probably not going to see them in any of these preseason games. They both tested positive for the coronavirus. Neither have played in training camp. Steve Kerr said it's very unlikely you see either of them. I think of the two, maybe Draymond would get on the court first because you don't really worry about him messing things up from the mental side of the game, whereas Wiseman, I think you want to bring on a little bit more slowly, but I'd still be surprised if we saw either of them. But I think for this first preseason game, don't expect to see regular season, you know, game shape Warriors, right? I mean, this is a team that had 9 months off. Steve Kerr has basically harped on the point all during all of training camp. This team looks like a team that has had 9 months off. They look rusty. They're not in condition. They're not in shape. Like, they're not in playing shape. Their conditioning is all off. Their reads are all off. This is a team that not only hasn't played in a long time, but has never played together. And so the chemistry isn't there. And so I think you're going to see them kind of get out pretty slowly. And maybe this thing could be a little ugly, maybe a little sloppy early on. But to sort of answer to the conditioning, Steve Kerr is probably going to keep all the starters, their minutes down to about 20 minutes per game. I think this is going to be very typical preseason where the first half is the only half that really matters, unless you're super interested in, you know, what Damian Lee has to do in the fourth quarter. Maybe if you're a fan, you're really only watching the first half, because I think that's going to be where you see the most stuff as far as what the starting rotation and the core rotation looks like. So but it's basketball, so.
with the Warriors in this first game, obviously conditioning is going to be one thing. We've talked about this a bunch, that they're going to be playing chaos basketball, that they want to push the pace on offense, they want to be in transition, that fewer things can go wrong if they're just pushing the ball in transition all the time. And certainly we've seen the Warriors do that before, but I think they want to take it to a new level this year. And defensively, obviously, they're going to work on a lot of the core fundamental stuff and maybe not ramp it all the way up. Do you think on offense, though, that Steve Kerr is almost going to try to get these guys in shape by basically running the system, which is, again, chaos that they want to run in the regular season? Or do you think it's a more subdued look in these first three games?
You're going to see the offense evolve over the course of the season. At first, it's going to be a lot of Steph Curry and Draymond Green when he eventually plays a two-man game, that pick and roll game that they love. I asked Steve Kerr about this actually earlier in the week. We know that the Warriors have routinely, under Steve Kerr, ranked at the bottom of the league in pick-and-roll frequency, in pick-and-roll usage. Yes. I asked him if he could see that number maybe lift a little bit higher, and he said it's really possible, only because you don't have Klay Thompson out there, you don't have shot creator like Kevin Durant. This is a team that basically only has one proven mode of scoring points right now, and it's the Steph Curry, Draymond Green pick-and-roll, which in years past was sort of a break-in-case-of-emergency type of thing. And I think you're going to see it be the staple of the offense now. Everything kind of moving off of that. You could see a third person involved in that screen and roll game when James Wiseman's healthy, when Marquise Chris is in there. You could see, you know, that third guy start to roll. Draymond Green can find him on the short roll or on a lob or something like that. You're going to have Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins from the wing slashing toward the basket. Everything's going to be based off of the middle, what Draymond and Steph are doing in the middle of the floor. And, of course, you're going to have Draymond Green playing nominal point guard, Steph Curry running around doing Steph Curry things. So that will be initially what it looks like. But Steve Kerr's big question, one of my big questions is, if not Steph Curry, where does the offense come from? And that's, you're not going to know, right? Training camp is nice and it's good to have it. Preseason is nice and it's good to have it. But we're not going to know probably until the year 2021 where consistent offense, if there is any consistent offense coming from anywhere, where it's coming from. Right. And once And look, it's probably Andrew Wiggins or Kelly Oubre if we're being realistic here. And once one of those guys, if one of those guys steps up, you're going to see the offense start to evolve, right? And incorporate more of what that person does well. And so Steve, I think, will evolve the offense defensively. I want to get your thoughts on this because they want to be a top 10 defense, and that's great. It's good to have goals in life. Mm-hmm. Got to have them.
Yeah. I'd like to weigh, 190 toned, pounds, right. But I think that's, I'm not 23 anymore.
Yeah, and you like IPAs too much. So what are you going to do?
I love IPAs. It's a real problem. and cheese. Are you familiar with this cheese? God. It's really outstanding. nevertheless, listen, I have been trying to figure out, because I totally agree with you, not that it's necessarily something that's up for interpretation. You're coming from the horse's mouth with what Steve Kerr said, though he has said stuff like that before and then it never comes to fruition. I don't think he has other options this time around. They're going to be a pick and roll team, at least when Steph is on the court, and they will try to figure it out when he's not, which is more or less the theme of this season. But man, I was trying to figure out who they remind me of, who would be analogous team.
That one note on the pick, you're absolutely right. I think people read into this, they're going to be this pick and roll team now. And I think you hit it on the head. Steve Kerr saying that they're going to run more pick and roll. The bar is so low. If they run more pick and roll, they will run the 28th most pick and rolls in the league this season. So let's not act like they're going to be James Harden and Clint Capella era Rockets out there. That's not what it's going to look like.
Totally.
It's just going to be more than what it was. And that's it.
Well, let me put it to you this way. For Warriors fans out there who obviously, I would imagine that this is not when you're jumping on the bandwagon. I'd imagine that you had some good times before last year. It's probably going to look a lot more like playoff basketball. Mm-hmm. From the Warriors, where they don't run, maybe if we have to get more granular, second Western Conference Finals, NBA Finals basketball from the Warriors. And perhaps the most recent example that will be able to be fresh in your memory is when Durant went out and they had to play the Rockets in Game 6 in Houston in that semifinal round. And Steph went scoreless in the first half. But that's the kind of offense that I think you can expect, which again, they did have Klay Thompson out there, so it's not totally fair. And they didn't have Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, for whatever that's worth, either. So I do think that they're going to be running a lot more pick and roll again, as you mentioned. It should also be noted that it's not as if they didn't ever set a pick. Their entire offense is predicated on picks. It's not at the ball. So they have to find a way to mesh those two things together so that they can have Steve Kerr's ideal versus the practical element of how they score the damn basketball this season.
You're going to see a lot of off-ball screens still, to your point. But in the past, it was Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, guys coming off of pin downs and off-ball floppy screens actions. And floppy action. Exactly. Now you're going to have guys like Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, instead of using screens to kind of maneuver their way around the three-point arc, they're going to be using screens to try to take the defense by surprise and catch them backdoor and things like that. You're still going to have off-ball screens. They're just going to have a different usage. And look, maybe it works. The fastest point from A to B is straight away, right? So
I would love to see a team that cuts. Yeah. All the time. And that would be very reminiscent of the 2015 Warriors, where, yes, they were shooting a ton of threes, but by today's standards, and it really has been a long time when you talk about the evolution of the NBA, they barely shot any threes. So it will look a lot like that. Again, talent abiding. But getting back to the defensive point, you're right. It's great to have goals. I don't think this team has the equipment in place to play top 10 defense in the NBA. Right. And I just don't think they do. I don't think that Draymond can defend three guys at one time. I am extremely skeptical of Oubre. Wiggins still needs to show me a focus that I'm yet to see, though I did very much like what he did at the end of last year. It's a completely different ballgame. This is the first time that he's really in it outside of that one playoff series that the Wolves had, which they were not in any way prepared for mentally. So there's a lot of questions. I do think Wiseman will be a big help in that regard, but again, he's coming in slow. The fact that their entire training camp was predicated on getting this defense together, and then Wiseman and Green, who are, in my opinion, the two most critical guys to have out there to figure out the defense. And yes, you know, you need wing defense, and yes, you need Steph out there, but like Wiseman is a guy who can legitimately protect the rim. I love Kevon Looney. I think Marquise Chris is awesome. Neither of them are doing anything remotely close to what James Wiseman is doing in terms of anchoring the middle of the court. And you can't replicate Draymond Green if you tried 1,000 times in a row. If you went out and just tried to make Draymond Greens every draft, all year, every year, you can't even come close. And trust me, teams around the NBA are trying. If you don't have your quarterback, you don't have a chance to win. And that's in the NFL, and that's on defense in the NBA. So this is a big, big issue that they're going to have to work through in rapid time. And honestly, that's not a great sign, because I bet they're going to have to settle for their, you know, lower expectations, given the fact that there's a lot of games, hopefully, fingers crossed, that they're going to have to play, and they're just going to have to throw something together in a very short span that can, you know, get some sort of result, and they hope that they can outscore their opponent. And getting back to the kind of point that I wanted to make, this team reminds me a whole lot of last year's Portland Trail Blazers. And I don't think that that's a good thing, because while the Blazers did, you know, win that play-in series in the bubble, they played well in the bubble, no doubt about that. And then they win that play-in series, and then they take game one off of the Lakers. That was a flawed team. And they were 29th in the NBA, if I remember correctly. It was certainly extremely low in overall defense. I don't think that the Warriors will be that bad, but I would bet on them being in the 20s before I bet on them being in the top 10. And offensively, Portland was third in the NBA in offensive rating last year, at least on Basketball Reference. And you know how these numbers waver. Ah, third is going to be a hell of a play.
Think they'll rank higher on offensive rating or in defense rating by the end of the year?
Offense. I don't think there's a question there, just because of Curry. And listen, we saw this a little bit last year in the D'Angelo Russell era. Like, they can put the ball in the basket every now and again. I mean, they do have the dudes. I mean, Eric Paschal is, as the kids say, a bucket on, you know, once a week occasion. It's not as if Oubre and Wiggins, they have guys who can score. I like Chris's scoring ability, especially in a little pick and pop thing. Like, they have dudes who can get buckets. And if you have Steph Curry leading the way, there's enough chaos that you're going to get buckets. I don't think they're going to be all that efficient, which I think is the word that has been missing from most people's vocabulary heading into this Warrior season. Efficiency is what separated Golden State from any other offense. They were hyper efficient. Their effective field goal percentage, true shooting wasn't even that great. They didn't go to the line enough, but their effective field goal percentage was always the best in the NBA. They're not going to be that anymore. And efficiency is the name of the game. If you're taking threes, you knock them down.
They're going to score. I mean, there's a world where they have one of the top five offenses in points per game, but it's not one of the top five offenses in offensive rating because they're not efficient, but because there's just no defense being played in those games, and the games are being played really quickly, and they're scoring 118 points per game, but they're giving up 120.
Very Blazers-like. You seem surprised when I said offense over defense.
Because this half-court offense is going to be a real grind, I think. I don't know. I trust Steph, and I trust Steve Kerr enough. Leaving last season, I thought, look, just getting Steph Curry back, a healthy and motivated Draymond Green, whatever he looks like at this age, it's a better player than what he was last year. And just, you know, having all – and whatever pieces that they add over the offseason, they're going to be better offensively than what they were. Defensively
– only one way to go, to be fair.
Very fair. Defensively, I thought that this team really needed to make some personnel changes, where on offense, I didn't think that that was the case. And that, look, that was considering Klay Thompson coming back and not, you know, tearing his Achilles. But defensively,
no, you're right.
This team needed to add personnel. The personnel of a top 15 defense, top 20 defense, just wasn't there. And I don't know that this offseason that they did what I hear a lot of war. They're so much deeper now. Like, are we sure that they're deep? Like, is Kent Bazemore being the sixth man considered a deep team? I like Kent Bazemore. I think him signing at the minimum is one of the sneaky deals of free agency. But I don't know that you want him as your
10-15.
I mean, do you really want him as your sixth man? And I'm sorry. Like I said, I like Kent Bazemore, but we cannot keep pointing to his 25 game sample size from Sacramento in 25 games that did not matter and say, look how great of a player he is. We need to look at the other 8 years of his career where he was very hit or miss. And look, I like Bazemore. I think he's a good locker room presence. I think he'll be a nice piece for this team that they didn't otherwise have. but to ask him and Brad Wanamaker to basically replace Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston, I think is a very tall task. And I don't know that they, like, they're better than what they had, but I don't know that they're so much better that all of a sudden you're going to have this top 10 defense. And now look, over this week, I've talked to three or four different coaches and all of them are saying the same thing. We have the length, we've got the versatility, we've got the athleticism to be elite defensively. And I like that. I like that that's the message. And that is the goal. Yeah. And look, so many teams, and I think Warriors fans could be spoiled. The Warriors at least have goals and just clear messaging and statements that they like to follow, where a lot of teams just have no idea what the hell it is that they want to do or what it'll look like.
They're trying. It's manifest destiny here.
But to me this season, on both sides, we talk about the pace on offense all the time. On defense too. The first 6, 7, 8 seconds of the shot clock are going to be the most important for this team on both sides of the ball, because this is not a team that is going to get stops on the 24-second shot clock. They're not going to force shot clock violations. They need to get jump passing lanes, blitz on defense, show on pick and rolls, do all these things and get deflections and steals, create turnovers and transition opportunities on defense in the first 6, 7, 8 seconds of the shot clock. And on offense, they need to score real quick, because if they don't, it's going to be Steph Curry with 4 seconds left on the shot clock just heaving up a three-pointer, which, look, there's worse offenses in the league, but that's not ideal.
Not many, to be fair. I mean, like, legitimately, as much as you say, oh, well, Steph has the ball in his hands and he's got, you know, 4 seconds left. Like, what kind of a shot is he getting up in that spot? It's not a clean look. Steph isn't. Yeah, this is the other thing, and we go back to 2016 when I said this is going to be more like playoff basketball. It's because in the playoffs everybody switches, and so you do all your off ball stuff, and guess what? It isn't available to you anymore unless you really want to hunt a mismatch in a motion offense, which is just sort of antithetical to what it is you're trying to do. So you get into, okay, you have to do pick and roll. That's really the only effective manner by which to sort of break down switching defenses, which are now just the norm across the NBA. Again, a lot of things have changed since the Warriors became a dominant force, to the point where the Warriors are no longer a dominant force. They had to go and get a guy like Kevin Durant because they needed somebody who late in the shot clock could just rise up and get a decent enough look. And Durant obviously was surplus to needs in that regard, but they couldn't do that with Curry. They would do that with Clay, and Clay's efficiency with the second unit, where he'd kind of be the offensive anchor of a second unit in 2015 and 2016. It was, they relied on Mo Spates a lot to get up shots on that team. And so then you go and get Durant, and now you have a guy who can just always, he'll never have a shot blocked at the end of the shot clock. Never. And every time you're pulling up from 18. That's fine. It's Kevin Durant. Now, as you put, who is that guy? Is it Wiggins rising up? I don't think that Wiggins' shot is necessarily unblockable. Is it Oubre? It probably Oubre wants it to be.
Right.
I think
Andrew Wiggins actually has the better skill set because he's a proven ball handler, been the number one option in Minnesota for better or worse. At least he has the experience. He's worked on his ball handling, three-point shooting, all that's there.
Isn't that what he failed
at? Exactly. And Kelly Oubre,
that's the system he came
Kelly
from.
Kelly Oubre, I think, doesn't have that skill set, but has more of the mindset than Andrew Wiggins does.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'll be an interesting push and pull, right? Because you can see just 100%. Schematically stuff running through Andrew Wiggins more than it ends up running through Kelly Oubre.
But Kelly Oubre could just be like, give me the ball. End of shot clock situations, right?
End of shot clock situations and when Steph is off the floor.
Right. Yeah. Which, dear God.
Steph is going to play 34-ish minutes per game this season, according to Steve Kerr. Mm-hmm. So that's I'm really bad at math. Is that
another interesting
14
plan.
To 16 minutes per game where things could go really badly? I mean, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's an entire quarter of basketball. You can lose a game in one quarter. You can lose a game. You can so as good as Steph, maybe Steph plays at an MVP level again this year.
Oh yeah,
I don't know how much that matters if these other guys aren't able to get the job done when he's off the court.
Are you starting to feel my Portland Trailblazers vibes here? Or are you starting to pick it up? There's clearly no CJ McCollum option, and certainly the Blazers didn't have a Draymond Green, but both teams do have a Kent Bazemore. Kemba Bazemore, 8.9 points per game last year. This is the other thing, too. I mean, where's the upside? The upside is being ascribed to, let's go, three guys. Wiseman, because obviously we've never seen him. We haven't seen him play basketball in over a year. So it's all this unbridled talent, and he's unquestionably exceptionally talented. So people are just going to naturally go to the end result in an expedient manner. Just think that, oh, well, it's upside and he'll be an all-star by the end of the year. Like, first off, that's not how big men work. Second off, you know, who the hell knows how long it's going to take for him just to get back up to basketball speed. But listen, I certainly am buying the upside on James Wiseman long-term. Short-term, who knows? And clearly there's a lot of upside there. So I'm not going to necessarily begrudge
Look at somebody like in last year's draft, Jackson Hayes, drafted to New Orleans. A lot of similar stuff being said about that. Jackson Hayes when he was coming out, that was said about Wiseman. And I like Jackson Hayes a lot. And he flashes really exciting stuff, big dunks, really great offensive rebound and putback, stuff like that. And that's what Wiseman is going to do. But Jackson Hayes was essentially a non-factor his rookie year. And that's okay. He was a raw project.
Until later in the year.
But then, you know, New Orleans also went out and got Steven Adams this summer, which I don't know what that says about what they think about Jackson Hayes. Might not say anything. But
he was a guy who played 17 minutes per game, got up four shots. I mean, what, he pulled down four rebounds, had an assist, half a steal, or a full block, 7.5 points.
I think Wiseman is a little bit more polished than Jackson Hayes was coming out of college. I agree. But to also expect him, as some fans I think are, for him to be Chris Bosh on offense and Kevin Garnett on defense, or just Chris Bosh on both ends would be a nice player. It's just not cool. Like those are really high expectations. And you talk to the Warriors coaches, and every single one of them preach patience so much. And they were really trying to keep expectations low with him. And that to me is meaningful. It's beneficial to Wiseman, but it also shows that they don't believe that he's going to come out and be that right away. And that's why I think Kevon Looney and Marquese Chriss are going to be ahead of him in the rotation for at least the first month of the season.
And there's no reason for them not to, considering what we already know about, you know, how delayed he is. It'd be hard enough if he was getting, you know, a full training camp.
I think it's going to be 11 minutes per game to start the year. And that might be on the high end.
Yeah. At the end of the year, I want to throw this at you. And obviously we're really pushing it, because who knows when the end of the year might actually come. It could be next October, given the way that, you know, the NBA is trying to shove 72 games into this schedule. But at the end of the year, if I told you that James Wiseman played 20 minutes a game on average, averaged 9 points per game, 6 rebounds, a block, and 3 fouls on 6 shots per game, how would that sit with you, somebody who doesn't have outsized expectations and is actually in the realm of reality?
Look, I'd be okay with it. To me, I would have to watch the games, right? If he looks completely lost by the end of the year on defense, then I don't really care if he's averaging 9 points or 18 points per game. It doesn't matter. If he looks completely lost on defense, that to me, it's going to be so much with him is going to be the eye test, because the numbers in college were phenomenal, right? And if you watch the 3 games, were phenomenal. Especially if you extrapolate to like per 36 or per 48 minutes.
Well, I feel bad for, you know, University of Tennessee Martin, who had to play, you know, a 7'1" superhuman, and they're going out there with a 6'5" center who's, you know, just the chonkiest boy
on the team. He's played one game of consequence. It was his last game at Memphis against Oregon. He was a non-factor in that game. He's played that one game of consequence over the last 2 years. I mean, that's what we're talking about with James Wiseman. So
has he ever been challenged? I mean, I guess you can make the argument that he certainly played. I don't know enough about his AAU stuff, and I shouldn't be bringing it up, because we'd like to at least sound like we know what the hell we're talking about. But let's get into it. I mean, can you think of the last time that he had to go up against equal competition? I can't imagine it was his actual high school, so it would have had AAU or like a Peach Jam.
There was competitive games that he had. He did not go to the superpower program where he could have gone and basically could have just rolled through a year. He stayed at East something school or whatever it was. And you know, they lost a few games. But to me, like, he was challenged in that Oregon game. Not center versus center wise, but they demanded, they targeted him in pick and roll after pick and roll. And sometimes he looked good and sometimes he looked bad. And I thought that was a challenge. And he'll be challenged in these training camps and these, or I'm in these practices. Absolutely. They're going to run him through the stress test. Right. And so that's going to happen. And that's when he'll get challenged. And then that's when they'll realize what he can do on the court. You're not going to see a whole lot of experimentation from James Wiseman in games. All that stuff's going to be behind the scenes.
No. And again, we preach caution, not because he is a prospect that, you know, needs that, like that we're trying to downplay, you know, potential expectations. We preach caution with Wiseman because this is how big men operate. Like, there's one Zion. He's not even equivalent to, you know, a James Wiseman type. Like, when we're talking about a prototypical center, a long, tall center, those guys take a couple of years. I mean, straight up, what if you're drafting them after 1 year of college, which most of them are. So, you know, you think about a DeAndre Ayton, who's a little bit bigger and not exactly the same player. But look, think about, you know, this is the first year where Ayton is going to be an all-star consideration, I would venture to say. We'll see if it actually happens. Like, you can see the development, but it takes a long time. It's a very heady position. And maybe Warriors fans, because Draymond Green carries so much of the defensive load, and he will with Wiseman, no doubt, but because Green carries so much of that load, we underrate the center position overall and the difficulty of playing it. But man, you think about why the Warriors brought back Andrew Bogut a couple of years back. It's because they needed somebody with a head about them to hold down the center position if Green wasn't on the court. Ultimately, Wiseman, with his number two overall pick, needs to be somebody that the Warriors can build around in the future. But it is going to take most of his initial NBA contract to find out if he is or isn't that guy. We will not find out this year unless he is an absolute supernova. And I don't think that there's anything he can do negatively that would, you know, label him a bust after 1 year. I think that would be a premature call because, again, center position takes so very long. Wes, I want to get one bold prediction out of you here before we head out. Warriors preseason is starting up. Regular season's coming on the 22nd. We will certainly talk before that first regular season game, but now is the time to get in the bold prediction before we see them on the court in any capacity whatsoever, I guess, outside of the video that the Warriors send out every day from training camp, which is oh so informative. Thank you so very much. One bold prediction from you, Wes Goldberg.
March 4th is the last day of the first half of the regular season. My bold prediction is not whether or not that's going to be the case, but that's what it's planned out for now, is that right. That's when the first half of the regular season ends. The NBA trade deadline is March 25th. Okay. Mm-hmm. My bold prediction is that the Warriors will be about a 500 team through the first half of the schedule.
Okay.
And they will absolutely be mentioned, really strongly, strongly mentioned for some big names by the trade deadline by March 25th, because as much as they may be preaching patience with James Wiseman, and I believe them right now, if they are a 500 team in March, and maybe they're starting to get an inkling that fans might be able to get back into the arena for the second half of the schedule, we'll see. I don't know how much longer that this team can be patient. That's not just ownership. I don't know that Steve Kerr wants to be all that patient. He could do anything else that he wants to do. He does not need to be patient. Bob Myers,
they have paid him so much money. He could just go to San Diego and sit on the beach.
Bob Myers has built 5 NBA Finals teams. He has 3 championships. He could just go back to owning an agency and do this and hang out at the same beach that Steve Kerr is hanging out at. He doesn't need to do this either.
Totally.
So
Arn's on the market, man. I don't think he's in charge anymore in Detroit, is he?
I have no idea what's going on in Detroit anymore. I think Oklahoma City sort of runs them as like a shadow company now, but
that's a very astute. That's some deep stuff. We can get into that later because the Presti conspiracy goes deep.
I don't know how uncomfortable the Rockets are willing to get with James Harden. I don't know what ends up happening in Washington, but everybody ends up knows what's going to end up happening in Washington.
You're telling me that Russell Westbrook isn't going to fix the problem?
Well, it depends on what the problem is that you're troubleshooting for. If you want to care about Washington Wizards basketball, then Russell Westbrook solves the problem. If you want the Washington Wizards to be a title contender or keep Bradley Beal past, you know, the year 2021, Russell Westbrook is probably not the solution. But
By the way, we have 10 more days until Giannis has to sign his Supermax, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So that's going
to
be fun.
There's just names out there. I think in Philadelphia, they want to give it some real games to see what Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid looks like. And if you listen to Doc Rivers at training camp, the second coming of Shaq and Kobe, I'll venture to go out on a limb and say that that's not going to be the case. So
Doc was always a good announcer, though, to be fair. I thought he was going back that route.
You know what? He uses his media pawns very well. But I will. That's my bold prediction, is that the Warriors will be about a 500 team by the end of the first half of the regular season and before the trade deadline. I will be writing a lot of trade rumor pieces.
Well, I don't think that's so bold. I think that everyone would have expected, because the Warriors are now just synonymous with trade rumors. So I guess I'm going to push you on this a little bit. Do they make a big trade at the deadline?
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Bold predictions. Who cares? It's a podcast. Yeah, they make a huge trade. They make the biggest trade ever.
All right. I think Draymond Green shoots over 30%
of
threes.
Oh, that's bold. Wow. Forget what I said. Jesus.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or real. I mean, honestly, the Draymond Green paradox is such to where if Draymond shoots over 30% on threes, it is somewhat transformative to the entire Warriors operation. And also, it is the lowest bar of success ever set. So that's
fun. Steve Kerr was basically asked if that's even a thing that matters anymore. And he was like, look, whatever Draymond Green does is what Draymond Green does. He helps us win games, period. And he was asked directly about, is he going to shoot? Do you think Draymond Green could shoot over 30%? And his answer was not yes. and so that was everything that I needed to know.
I do think that teams are going to leave Draymond open a lot, and as well they should, because they should just be triple teaming Steph Curry and daring anyone else to beat him. And Draymond, obviously the easiest guy outside of whichever center is on the court to leave open, though I have seen Kevon Looney knocking down some corner threes. Let's see if that translates into the regular season. Nevertheless, I think he just goes on a heater. I think that whenever it is he gets onto the court, he just goes on an absolute heater, and it's super fun. When Draymond's knocking down threes, some stuff has gone down. It will be a downright travesty that there won't be fans in the stands to watch it, because as much as a Steph Curry no-look, you know, flip three-point shot, it is an incredible moment to be in an arena with 20,000 people. As much as Klay Thompson going semi-nuclear is an incredible moment to be with fans, as much as, you know, a big thunderous dunk can bring people out of their seats, people lose their damn minds when Draymond makes a three. And I just think it's going to be a travesty that we're not going to see fans in the stands, because I think Draymond just makes a whole ton of threes. In fact, I'll just do a shit ton of threes to start the season. I'm extremely excited by the prospect and the possibility. It's going to completely mess with any defense that the Warriors go up against, because they don't prepare for such a contingency of Draymond knocking down threes. Draymond's going to be talking all sorts of smack. Nothing gets his mouth going like a made three-point shot. And I think that they carry that juice to that 500 record that you predicted. I think that is ultimately the difference in the operation, because they're going to do a lot of pick and pop, man. They're going to do a lot of pick and pop, and they're just going to
Draymond should be taking five or six threes a game. I agree with you. Just let it rain. Let's go. Who needs Clay? You know, you got a new splash sibling, Steph Curry. Let's go.
Yeah. Warriors World is definitely putting out a Draymond and Steph Splash Brothers tee. Like that's happening. That should happen. It'll be limited edition because it will only last for so long.
By the way, I love when bad three-point shooters make three-pointers and then start talking smack as if the law of averages isn't literally just taking place in front of us. Like, there is not a starter in the NBA who makes 0% of his three-point shots. So eventually that player will make, by the law of averages, a three-point shot. And immediately when that player makes a three-point shot, that player starts chirping at the defense, you can't leave me open, you can't leave me open. And what the defense is saying is, you know what, now we can leave you open the next 20 times you take that shot. Yeah. Because from the law of averages, you're going to go 0 for 20 based on your career averages. But so that's one of my sneaky favorite things in the NBA to watch, is when non-three-point shooters start talking trash when they make threes. It's my favorite thing.
Baby, you're about to get a whole mess of it from Draymond Green if my prediction comes true. And that defense, of course, known as the he can have it defense. Let him have it. Just walk away. If he knocks it down, good for him. But yeah, I think Draymond's mouth is going to be running. I think that there's going to be intrigue and excitement around the Warriors, at least to start the season. Perhaps they even blitz the Brooklyn Nets in game one and get everybody all excited. I do not think that the good times will last. I don't think that Draymond will shoot the 50% or something that I'm predicting he'll start the season with. I think he ends above 30, though, if for no other reason than he stops shooting them. So get yourself a nice big cushion and coast it to the finish line like I did in so many of my classes in college and high school. Wes, this is a pleasure as always. Enjoy Chase Center tomorrow. I'm going to use you as a guinea pig to find out if it is safe or not for me to be there. So mask up, and I can't wait for your report on not just the situation, but the game itself.
Sounds good. I can't wait to be there.
Excellent. All right. We will talk next week, and then, you know, we'll do it frequently from there on out. But until next week, everybody, have a good one.